Tonight I'm very happy and excited to welcome back Mark Allen Frost to Many Rivers Books and Tea. He is a channel for Seth. He has written, what now, half a dozen books?
This is his seventh
book. And tonight he'll be talking about the Seth autobiography. The Seth autobiography will be available in 8 days, 10 days, something like that. There was a slight delay in its publication. If you are interested, we have a sign-up sheet, and we will be able to order it from you. It will be available from our distributor. Apologies for not having you here tonight, but ever since Mark has come to Many Rivers, I've always enjoyed his appearances, and interacting with Mark and Seth has always left me for weeks at a time with something to ponder and consider. So thank you very much for coming back to Many Rivers. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, let's see some familiar faces. I am Mark Allen Frost. I write books with Seth, and he's hovering around already. I'm going to try to keep him at bay a bit. He likes to come in and take over, but I would like to first say a couple of things about how I came to meet Seth. How many people have seen this speech of mine that I give where I talk about meeting Seth and the hypnotherapy practice? A couple of folks. Okay, would you bear with me while I roll it out again? Appreciate it. I was a student at Dominican University in San Rafael, California, and I was in the counseling psychology program there, and I was having extraordinary success with my clients. I was doing a student internship there, and I was under the mentorship of the head of the program, and I was explaining to him, well, what is it about this? I seem to have a magical touch with some of these intractable illnesses. Food issues like bulimia, anorexia that are very difficult to treat. I was having spectacular success using hypnosis. And my mentor, who was a practitioner of transpersonal psychology, said, well, you have an obvious tear in the envelope, and you're looking into the unknown reality. That reminded me of Seth's stuff about the unknown reality. So I continued to have spectacular success with my clients here, thinking it was coming from me, but as it turns out, I had a little help from Seth. He was about to make an entrance into my life in a really big way. Though, because I wasn't making much money on my internship, I had a little hypnotherapy practice, a cute little office in San Rafael, and I practice a form of hypnotherapy. I called it deep humor hypnotherapy, where I tried to get people attached to positive states of consciousness to help them heal themselves. And I was having some success. A woman phoned me up and said she wanted to have a past life session. She wanted to experience her past lives. And I had not done that, but I had learned it in my schooling to be a hypnotherapist, and so I said, why not? We'll help each other. You can help me show me how to do this, and I'll attempt to lead you back to some lives. Her name is Cass Smith. She showed up, and I did a regression, and she apparently went back into a life in which she was in the Colosseum being eaten by lions. And so I knew enough to tell her to don't stay in the body, get out of the body. And so she did, and documented what happened as the lions ate her flesh. So I immediately thought to myself, well, we're going to write a book together, this woman and I. This is obviously a real phenomenon. I sort of have my doubts about it, even though I've been a serious student of Seth, basically, for... I hadn't read his books in 6 or 7 years before that, but I did read them beginning in the early... when was it? Late 60s, I guess, right after Jane started writing the books. And so... it was not to be the case. We weren't going to write books together on past lives. She made an appointment to meet the next week for some more past life regressions. In the meantime, she phoned me up and said, do you know somebody named Seth? And I said, yeah. I was just thinking about Seth. He's a famous channeled source. He used to speak through Jane Roberts. And she said, well, she was doing meditations with the Benjamin Crown, the Maitreya. I forget what they call those meditations, but Seth was apparently interrupting her meditations and saying, I want to write a book. I want to start writing books again. So I very excitedly asked her to come immediately to the office. And I said, do you think we can pull Seth through with hypnosis? And she said, well, let's try. Amazing as it might sound, after about 15 minutes of simple regressions, suggestions to go back, is Seth there, that type of thing, really simple, inane suggestions. She suddenly said in this low, masculine voice, I'm here. I said, you're here. And he said, yes, I'm here. You asked for me, I'm here. And I said, Seth? He said, yeah, this is Seth. And so I asked some confirming questions, like, are you the Seth that spoke through Jane Roberts? Indeed I am. Indeed I am, is what he said. So I'm sort of in an altered state at that point, because Seth was like my mentor through a couple of decades of searching for the truth, studying how reality is created, and so on. And so I was kind of doubtful that this was really happening. I was about ready to graduate from Dominican, and I thought my colleagues were playing a prank on me. And I thought, wow, this is a very elaborate prank, because all this stuff sounded true, what Seth was telling me, that he thought it was time to write books on the nature of personal and collective realities, because we were in danger of blowing ourselves up and destroying the planet in the process. That was his main reason. The next session, which happened the next day, Seth said, well, let's start writing the book. And I said, well, I'm not prepared. I was recording everything on video. And so I have videotape of all those, you know, all those early sessions. And he says, well, let's begin now. You have a camera, and you can transcribe from the audio and the camera of the film. And he began the book that day. And you can go to YouTube and see how he did it. He says, chapter one, gives the title of the chapter, and then he goes through the whole chapter, verbatim, through Cass. And I'm sitting there with my jaw kind of dropped. As he laid out the first chapter of the book and gave it a title, 9/11, The Unknown Reality of the World. And then over the next few weeks, we met together regularly, and Seth spoke through Cass and put together the rest of the book. So that book is entirely unedited. It was just a stream of consciousness, Seth consciousness, I guess, Michael. And we immediately approached the publishers of the Seth books. they didn't want to hear about us because they thought it would be unethical to print Seth's books, supposed books, he called it. Mark Allen. I said, well, for a few weeks I had Seth give me the probabilities. I would say, well, Seth, what are the current probabilities for us self-publishing or getting a publisher? And from the outset, he said, Mark, you're never going to find a publisher. They don't want me to return. Too many people have their lives and money invested in my not returning. So I was kind of disappointed in that because I thought I would, you know, put together the books and then have a life of my own. As it turns out, we did publish that book, Seth Returns Publishing, and self-published it, printed it, put it together, distributed it, and there was a sort of crisis of faith that occurred for Cass during that time. She is a artist housewife who likes her private life, and she said to me, well, why don't we just print a prototype and say that we did it, and then go on with our lives. She was afraid that she would have, like Jane Roberts talked about in her book sometimes, people camped out on her deck wanting to talk to Seth, that type of thing. No private life whatsoever. So she said, well, Mark, go ahead. You can, because at that time, Seth was also putting this material in my head. You can read about that in the books. He would put it in our heads while we were sleeping. And so the next day, you just turn on the channel, basically, and it flows through. That's how this channeling process works, I'm finding. Sure enough, as Cass went on to explore Benjamin Krem's world and follow him around the world, Seth and I wrote more books on our own. We wrote the next chapter in The Evolution of the Soul, which is about how to contact your energy personality. Like I contacted Seth, my energy personality, my guy. He teaches everybody how they can do that for themselves. That's one of the main reasons he's here, to teach people how to contact their higher selves. After that, we wrote Thought Reality. It has two regimens in it. One is to, it's called Spiritual Prosperity. And he shows you how to create a perception of the abundant universe, as he calls it. He also has the healing regimen in there, how to use his techniques to heal yourself or another person. That's our most popular book so far. People mainly buy that in ebook fashion, and we have people, hundreds of people, probably thousands at this point, from all over the world, download it off our website and use the healing regimen to heal themselves. I get emails from people who are curing themselves of illnesses. So that's kind of cool. The next three books, we call them the trilogy, and we published them all at the same time. All that is, it's a program for awakening, the way Seth described it. A book that you can take out into the forests and practice creating your own reality, proving to yourself that you're the creator with all that is of reality, and then having fun with it, awakening yourself. His idea of awakening is you become cognizant of the literal goings-on within your reincarnational lives, simultaneous selves, he also calls it. That's what awakening is in his practice as we're doing it together. So I just learned that all that is a bestseller here. Yeah. I'm happy about that. Seth is probably happy about that. His, well, as you'll learn later, his thing is to entertain and then slip this ancient wisdom stuff into your subconscious while you're reading. I don't know if you're hip to that, but that's what he's been doing. And in retrospect, I can see how he did that with Jane Roberts. It's in the old books also. the second book in the trilogy, Mystery Civilizations, that's largely my doing. I wanted to know about Atlantis, the Mu and those unknown civilizations that people dream about. I wondered if they were real. Do they have a component of reality there? Can we visit them? Seth says they exist as a state of consciousness that you can visit. So if you're interested in Mystery Civilizations, that's a book to read. The third book is something that Seth has been asking me to write for him since I met him, Soul Mate, Soul Family. This is an updating of his Families of Consciousness theory. I don't know if you're familiar with that. He theorized different families of consciousness that had the members of these families of consciousness had specific personality traits, like the Sumari. His main emphasis these days is on Sumari because he suggests that the Sumari are behind the New Age movement in particular, and these renewal movements that are transforming our political, social, and economic systems. He says that that's a family of consciousness called Sumari. And he maintains that most of the people that are interested in his books are Sumari. And that you're, for example, in this instance, you're meeting again in this time frame to share this ancient wisdom, this knowledge about what really matters, the way things really work. Seth is trying to make himself known here, so I'm going to at least read a few bits about what the autobiography is about. Again, with the autobiography, it's a pretext for teaching you about stuff. And he uses a technique he calls holographic inserts, where he presents words on a printed page that elicit a response within your consciousness that helps you to remember these other lives, particularly lives lived in some of these seminal civilizations. One was called Ga, the divine matriarch, he calls it. A lot of interesting stuff. So let me just read the table of contents here to give you an idea of what the book is about. And then after I get rid of all the stuff that I have to say, I'll let Seth come through and he'll take over. Table of contents, these are the existences. He has an overview and I'm going to read it to you here. But first, he has chapter one is the overview. Chapter two is an Indian existence that was mentioned in Seth's speech, I think. I always wanted to know what that was about. He tells you what that was about and who was who. Apparently Jane and her husband and Rob and others, members of my soul family also, interacted in that life. That was very interesting. He documents, this is a fantastic one, Dawn Ra is her name. She is a female, 46 years old. She lives in the future, a probable future, 4018 in the future. This is a really interesting one.
How deep is the water, 4,000?
4,000, that's a lot. Well, oh, you think we're going to be flooded? I don't know. If you read the book, you'll see that Seth has a positive view of the future, particularly 2012. He says it's going to be a breakthrough, not a breakdown or a breakup. Chapter 4, apparently he was a Tibetan scribe. It's a very interesting one. In a lot of our lives, because I'm part of the Seth entity, we're scribes. We take dictation from non-physical beings, which is basically what I'm doing. When he was a scribe, Tibetan scribe, he was doing the same thing, taking dictation from non-physical beings, sacred scripts. In the material with Jane, he also mentioned that he was a spice merchant. Ever since I read that, I've wondered about it, and I haven't found any more material about it. So I asked Seth, well, what about the spice merchant and a couple of other people? Was it you that asked, Bill? one of our regular clients wanted to know about the spice merchant, so he lays it out there. He was a spice merchant. He had 14 kids and 6 wives, and he had a bad opium habit, among other things. I mean, he was really like the Charlie Sheen of his day. Sorry. Please forgive me. He was a Roman soldier. That's also another reference that was made in the early works. Roman soldier. I've always wanted to know about that, so I said. He said, yeah. He and I were Roman soldiers, and we experienced life together. I don't want to spoil it for you. It's a really interesting life. He was a minor pope. He said that back. That was something he said in Seth's speech. I've often wondered about that. Seth is a pope? Yeah, he was a minor pope. And he had a projection of consciousness in which he projected into Pope Alexander, I think it was in the 1600s, just because he could do it. He existed as Pope Mark, another synchronicity, 336 AD. He was a pope for about a year and spent most of his time, you know, drinking wine. He was an introvert and didn't like people, so he was not a very successful pope. I think that's why I said minor pope. He was an Italian woman. This is a nice one, in which he and I also lived, in which he experienced love. You know, what's it like to fall in love? Surrender to love. As it turns out, the Seth entity, human counterparts have a problem surrendering to love. And I can attest to that. There's something there. But you can read about that in the book. Female of high estate. He was a... this is another really good life. These are really interesting things. They could each make a movie. Female of high estate from New Orleans. A wealthy merchant dragged his wife to New Orleans back in pioneer days and immediately got trampled by horses, trampled to death, and so she had to take over his little shop, and she grew it. She made a success out of it. So we learned some lessons there. After each of these lives, Seth talks about the lessons he learned. In the new material, he maintains that that's why we're in physical reality, to learn lessons of value fulfillment, which are largely how do we embody the virtues, the human virtues. How do we avoid negativity and evilness and embody virtue? That's kind of a different tack than he took with Jane, I think you'll agree. An Atlantean life, if you can wrap your mind around that, wrap your beliefs around that. That was an interesting one. Then he talks about animal fragments, the phenomenon of projecting consciousness into an animal and experiencing the world through their eyes. Then he speaks about post-transition environments, what happens after you die. This is where he spends most of his time now. The home dimension, he calls it. There's a dimension he calls the dimension of virtue, a place where everyone goes when they transit, when they die. And negativity is not allowed there. It sort of reminds me of the myths of heaven, that type of thing, stories of heaven. As Seth has been telling me, myths are not mythological, they're real to a degree. Seth is about ready to come through, so. Then in the end of this book, he asks you to write your own multidimensional autobiography, which entails exploring your past lives. Basically, that's what this book is, this autobiography. He explores his past and future lives for your entertainment. And in the meantime, he's trying to teach you something in the subtext. Now, let's see here. I think I would like to just read a bit about the overview. this is a conversation between me and Seth. The germination of the book happened out, came out of nowhere. I just had an idea. Autobiography? What, my autobiography? No. And then he said, no, Mark, I'm going to write my autobiography. Basically, I was pestering them for 3 years to write an autobiography because I thought it would be interesting way to teach people about this new theories and stuff and entertain them also. So basically, this is how we started out. I said to him under my breath, basically, because he'll contact me, I'll be out walking, and he'll say, Mark, here's what we're going to be doing next. So I said, can you wait till I get home? No, get a pad and pencil, write it down. So I got a pad and pencil and wrote it down. Call it a multidimensional autobiography. He says, catchy phrase. Just to confirm that it was I, Seth, who inspired you to come up with the idea. The work will pull together our other volumes into one coherent body of work. Body, see, this is not a body. He's trying to make a joke. A survey, if you wish, and you're quite correct in your findings, I believe, that your culture is interested in personality, first and foremost. I'm hoping with this personality piece to help the world community on the journey inwards toward the soul self of the individual. This can be a tricky endeavor, Mark. You have already noticed in our work together that I use this technique of distracting the reader with interesting bits of ephemera while I deliver soul-based material to the unconscious. This shall continue in the biography in a format suited for the masses, again, as we presented in the 9/11 book. I will ask you to keep your intellect out of the mix here. In matters of catalyzing the human spirit to look within and simply begin the spiritual journey, we must keep it very, very elementary. I think I'm just going to let Seth come through and answer your questions now. Anyway, that's the basics of the autobiography. I'm going to wet my whistle and then let Seth come through. Does anyone have a pressing question they want to ask Seth, just so I can be prepared for it? Often people will stand up in the middle of these things and say, what about my wife's health issues? I don't know if anybody has a pressing question, but pressing issues, life and death issues, that type of thing, or merely, yeah, I'm happy to answer scholastic type questions.
Seth, then, is a spirit?
He doesn't like that word, but he's a personality essence, he calls himself. Personality essence. Yeah, he's a... Why don't you let me bring him through, and then maybe that'll be his first answer. What is he? Does that suit everybody? How much time do I got, Doctor?
It is 5 after 8, so, 30 minutes or so.
Okay, yeah.
So your definition would be?
He's a personality essence. The Seth entity... is an amalgam of souls.
Just out in the ether?
Well, out in the other dimension. He calls it the home dimension. Yes, you, after you die, you go somewhere. Here's something I just learned about it, too, is that your soul, having gained all this wonderful stuff, learning your lessons in physical reality, does not die. It goes into other dimensions and resides for a time, and then it looks back at the life lived and says, well, did I learn this lesson? I was an asshole, let's say. And you have to admit where you cause people harm, and you're... Of course, you take credit for being a good person, if you're a good person, at least part of the time. And then you study that life through the creation of these holographic displays, as he calls them, in which you relive critical experiences in your life. And you can redo them over infinitely to get a better result. When you discover what you have yet to learn that you should be learning, then you go back into physical form and attempt to learn those lessons. Now, as far as Seth, what is he? Is he a spirit? He's the essence of different personalities of an entity. He presents himself as a grandfatherly, scholarly, gentle type because he knows people react positively to that for the most part. That's basically it. He is more of a sensed presence more than anything, as far as I know, as far as I can say. Okay, I'm going to have a sip of this and then let Seth come through. Now, I'm going to experiment with putting on glasses to contain myself so I'm not distracted. But then if I feel like I can maintain, I'll just take them off. But it's a good way to focus myself. Okay. First, let me say, I think the reason I said that I see a lot of familiar faces is because you're all familiar to me. You know, I know you people from somewhere. You know? Something to think about. It really... Seth is trying to teach me the validity of his concept that we are meeting together in this time frame, but we're also meeting in other bodies, in other time frames, sharing this ancient wisdom stuff. Okay. Yes, you're always doing the same thing. Now, in a nutshell, you are either avoiding the issue or you are addressing the issue. What is the issue? You are spirit in physical form. If you're avoiding that, you're trying to discover a way around your lessons. Now, some of my readers are uncomfortable with this new concept of mine, learning lessons. They think that they can be cerebral throughout their life. This was a mistake I made in my books with Jane. In a way, I condoned that. I suggested that it was enough to realize that you're the creator of your own reality. Some people took that as justification for dismissing the poor and the disabled while they're creating their own reality. I have nothing to do with that. I'm creating my own reality. Now, I've returned to broaden that concept a bit. So we come up with this idea of lessons of value fulfillment. The way one does this is to experience your life without the paraphernalia of an ego or an intellect. It is an accessory, really, isn't it? It helps you to avoid what is really happening here. It does help you make sense of what is happening here, though. This mind of yours, as I've said in my books, is a sort of governor. It limits your perception of what is really going on here so that you can handle it. If you were to see what is really going on here, you would be blown away. Merck enjoys this term. It's a leftover from the psychedelic experience. And so as you push the ego to the side, let's say you push the ego to the left, and you let the intellect stay to the right, what is here in the middle? Your soul is looking at your world. Your soul is looking at the world. Here in the autobiography, I'm presenting Mark's lessons to teach him a lesson about openness, being open with people. Not being secretive, not hiding, putting it all out there. His main lesson is to create loving understanding for everyone that he meets. This is a practice, really. You courageously meet people in your everyday life. And you interact with them. You attempt to understand them without anger, without fear. This is what we mean by learning lessons. We're keeping it very simple. The more that you can love your fellows, the better off you'll be. This is how you learn your lessons. And so it is the very basic one that we are speaking of in this book. As Mark is forced to go out and present himself to groups such as this. He learns what it's like to be human. It's easy for an author to sit in a dark room and avoid people. It's much more difficult to go out. And present himself to people. I can see you have many questions. Now, should we answer your question about what I am? Well, I am a personality essence. I dislike the word spirit. It has negative connotations. Am I Mark's higher self? I would say so. Now, in the past, when I worked with Jane, they were trying to find a way to avoid that. I was Jane's higher self. I was also connected to Rob in a very integral fashion. I have an assortment of personality traits that I have exhibited in many bodies, male and female, over the millennia and into the future, thousands of years. Now, a fantastic feat, you might ask. All of you are doing the same thing. Yes, you are an individual person sitting in a chair right now, and you're maintaining. You're maintaining your corporeal form. However, what would happen if you were to drop the ego to the left and the intellect to the right and allow your soul to perceive this world of yours? Would you look so serious? I suggest you would act like this young child here. You would begin to play and leave seriousness to the serious. I am a wave band of information, and I have been assisting humanity since you were established in this dimension from star essences, you might call it. Yes, you were from the stars, literally. And so as these farm boys from other star systems came to Earth, created collectives of various types, collectives of humans learning to live together. These initial pioneers knew that they were just one of many lives. They knew that they came from a star system. Over time, however, you forgot that. Now, with this New Age movement that we endorse, many of you are considering your origin. Well, where did I really come from? Where do we go after death? I'm here to assure you that you survived death. You see, I've survived many, many deaths. I am at the end of the journey into physical reality, however. I'm a light body. And I'm more inclined to study than to wrestle with the virtues. Am I answering your question? It is a felt presence. It is a wave band of energy. You were connected to it, or you wouldn't be here. Yes?
Why is Seth bothering with us?
That is an excellent question. Now, you were on the cusp of a transformative moment. Some of you think it's going to happen next year. It's already happening for you. It's true that it may be completed in the next few years, but you're already in it. Perhaps you've noticed how everything seems to be falling apart. If you read your newspapers, not merely these negative media, as we call them, but any newspaper, you can see that all your systems are disintegrating. The ground beneath your feet is shaking, earth changes, and so on. All of this caused by the effects of negative thought. And so I wrote this book on 9/11, hoping that you can clean up your thoughts. Basically, that's what we do. We're giving you techniques to change your reality creation strategies in the moment. Where the changes are is in the moment. That's when you're creating it. Correct? In the moment. So I ask you to wake up in the moment. When you have a moment for a day, I'm making a pun here. Ask yourself, well, what am I making now? If you are crying, if you are hiding from the bill collector, if you're fighting with your spouse, that's your feedback. That's the reality you're creating. Are you happy with that reality that you're creating in that moment? You're creating out of habits, habitual creation of negative realities. So there are too many humans creating negative realities and you've reached a tipping point here in this space-time continuum of yours, in which you can go one of two ways. You can change your thoughts for the better, meaning you can push the ego and the intellect away and create your reality through a soul self perspective. Or you can continue to create through the ego intellect perspective. It's what's causing your problems, the tendency to think that you have power over people, that you have dominion over the earth and its animals. That is a big mistake for you. So why have I returned? I'm helping you to clean up your mess before you drown in your own effluvia. And it's really, some of my readers wonder why I'm not as jovial as I used to be. I still think I'm quite jovial. I think I'm jovial. However, perhaps I have toned it down somewhat because this is a critical state of affairs for you. If you do not sense it, you're not paying attention, to coin a phrase. If you do not notice how dire the situation is, perhaps you're in denial. Perhaps you're rationalizing it. If you do not think that you have lessons to learn, and I mean immediately, you're not paying attention. If you do not notice that your lessons are right in front of you, that they're threatening you, if you don't notice that, something's wrong here. You're not paying attention. That's why we're offering these modest books of ours, elementary practices. Now, this is a big change for the Seth entity to suggest a spiritual program for humanity, because it was stressed as an intellectual path in my works with Jane.
Yes. Has anybody already achieved the better side of the 2012 change? Like, has somebody who's on the earth right now actually gone into the fourth dimension but retained their physical body?
Yes, we are. Yes. It is a skill many of you are learning currently. Now, when I counsel my students over the phone, we have many students we counsel over the phone, and they phone up on a weekly basis, some of them, and they say, well, what about this and what about that? And I help them find reference points in my teaching to describe to them what is actually going on. You're waking up, is what I usually say. You're waking up. Why is it so painful? Well, you're waking up. It's a painful thing to wake up and realize that you lived your existence up until now in a fog. So this multidimensional experiencing is becoming commonplace among those who know, those who want to know, those who are finding out. If you're hiding from it, or if you're looking at this with a cynical eye, as some of you are now, you might not be experiencing these momentary awakenings, as we call them. You'll be on the phone with someone, let's say, and you hang up the phone, and you have a memory. It's like a deja vu, let's say. Where does that memory come from? It's alien. There are no reference points in this memory that you can point to. And yet, it is as though you are experiencing it currently. And then you think about this memory for a bit. But what happens next, you usually have to dismiss it as an anomaly, as a brain fart. Some of these are bleed-throughs into your simultaneous lives, in which you are experiencing life usually on Earth in another body, often of another sex, of a different age. That's why it's so alien. In my books, I'm teaching you how to hold these momentary bleed-throughs and ride them, in a sense. Ride them into that other dimension of time in which you're experiencing the life. It is a bleed-through into a past life, often. That is how my students are allowed an expansion of belief. When I do some work with a client, let's say, who is open, who is willing to expand their beliefs, and I show them where they are, let us say, currently they're an authoritarian male, let's say, that's having problems with their wife, let's say. She won't do what I tell her. And then I tell them that, well, you in another life are a woman that's been abused. And the fellow will say, really? And I'll say, yes, you are being abused. Do you like being abused? If they can make that leap, it's a leap between dimensions. In a moment, they're experiencing the wife that is being abused. Do you see how that enlarges the personal consciousness? All of you are abusers, and all of you are being abused currently in the spacious moment that connects all of your lives. And so this is what we do, basically. I keep it very simple. In our phone sessions, the opportunities for intimacy and for a disintegration of this egoic armor that everyone has are very good. In a few seconds, I can help the person unload their stuff, you might say, and allow them to facilitate these breakthroughs into other lives. Is that making sense? Is there any more questions? Did I answer your question, Yang?
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
When you say into other lives, I mean, does that mean the personalities that make us up?
If that's what you mean, yes, that's what that means.
Well, that's what I got out of that.
Okay, well, let me put this in a form that I think you can take within. You are a human being. You are a male. You have a particular body type. You have a particular personality. You are the sum of thousands of other personalities of humans who exist past, present, and future. All of these personalities exist in sum within your mentality. Now you pick and choose from all of these different personalities what you're going to embody, what you're going to make your own. Does that make sense? You believe that you are the captain of your own ship. And in a sense, you are. I mean, you are leading an individual existence. However, if you do simple exercises, like we say in the book, you'll realize that you are a multidimensional being and that you might benefit from exploring these other lives and picking more consciously what you're going to integrate into your current personality expression. For example, if you're experiencing lack. Lack with a capital L, you don't have enough money for necessities, let's say, or let's say you have a middle class income but you want more money, more things, let's say. It is my suggestion that there is an existence, simply because you're living thousands of lives, in which you are experiencing the height of prosperity, of abundance. So the idea is, well, I'm pulling in a few personality aspects from that personality that is existing in ultimate abundance. Perhaps I need more, though. Do you see? You want to banish lack completely from your life? Mm-hmm. And so you take a voyage in the spacious moment, in meditation, in prayer, whatever you want to call it. Some of my clients like to walk and call in their guides and call in their other lives, and they come to them. However you wish to do it, it's a way to access a, let's call it a psychic, etheric database in which you can pick and choose what you want to imbue your current personality expression with. So let's say you're not having enough fun in your life. Somewhere in your in this panorama of multidimensional lives that you're living, it's some jolly sort. You want to live a more jolly existence, so you tune into this existence using your intent. Where is this life in which I'm a jolly sort? And you, in a sense, interview this personality. Get a sense of the feeling tone that they're creating. Feeling tone. And then you remember it when you come back out of the meditation. You integrate it consciously in your personality. These are the types of practices that we teach in the books. It's a... it's related to the old work I did with Jane. However, it's definitely up a level in understanding and power, I believe, also. Does that help you?
I just wondered if not just intent, but action, is action involved?
We call that manifestation. Embodying a feeling tone. There is a best case scenario, personality, life that you're living. Let's say it's in the 40s, the early 40s, and you're quite wealthy, and you are a raconteur. You have more money than you know what to do with. To coin the phrase. The action is concerned with considering that, expanding your beliefs to the degree that you can believe that, visiting that life in meditation, in trance, what have you, bringing back that information. That's a form of action. Bringing it back, meditating on that, incorporating that into your manifestation activities. You're a reality creator, you see. Yes, that's where the action comes in. I'd also like to relate that to... it's a bone I pick with my students that I've been presenting information to humanity over hundreds of years, thousands of years. However, you know me as the author of the Jane Roberts books. Now, how many of you who have read the old books still practice those exercises that I gave you originally? How many of you have put that into action? Very few have, and that is why I came back to present more possibilities for action. Because it's one thing to collect, let's say you collect metaphysical literature, and it is another to act on it. When you act on it, you catalyze the awakening experience within your consciousness, and you will receive, I promise you, suggestions from non-physical beings, what you might call spirits, gods, goddesses, your ancestors. It takes action, though, however. It takes doing the practices, doing the techniques, not merely putting the book on the shelf. Well, that's my soapbox moment. Do we have time?
One more question.
One more, Janaka.
Seth, 27 years ago, I read Seth Speaks as a young man, and you were talking about we create our reality. And so I went to this little bridge in these redwoods. I said, if that's true, okay, I'll be tested. And I said, I want a beautiful blonde on a horse coming up and saying hello to me. Within a minute, I heard, I turned around, there's this beautiful blonde on a horse coming over. And I looked pretty stupid, probably my mouth went open, and she just waved and went down the path. I said, well, great, great. She didn't stop. She didn't stop and say hello, so I'm okay.
Mm.
But she had forded, and she came off on the other side and said, hi, you've been here, you come here often? And then the next day we had a picnic and we're walking around. She said, we're talking about where she lived, and there used to be a lot of animals, and she said, used to see lynxes everywhere. I said, I would love to see a lynx. And we turn the corner, and there's this lynx looking at me. And then that bubble popped. And being able to manifest like that, I don't think I've maybe besides a few times experienced that, but nothing to that extreme. Why? What happened? Why can't I just go, okay, $1 million. I want to see $1 million right there in my, when I go home and there's a bag of $1 million in my house.
Why?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we suggest in the book that it's lessons. You're here to learn specific lessons. Mm. Now, let me say this. With regards to that, I'm teaching Mark how to become prosperous. So he has a lesson to learn about prosperity. Now the basis is love. We call it love with a capital L. So this love with a capital L is the most powerful thing in your system. It has the energy to create, to manifest. You've read my books and you know that I suggest that your camouflage reality is constructed on a structure. We call it the love light matrix. It's light and it's fueled by love. That's, I would say to the degree, now this is being very simplifying it, to the degree that you're not loving with a capital L, you will encounter negative lessons. You will not be able to manifest as you would like. It's very simple. To the degree that you can sustain yourself on positive emotions rather than anger and fear, you will be able to create positively, manifest what you will. Does that make sense? And so, in answer to your question, I would say that you were in one of those rare times when everything was working for you. What really occurred, though, in this context of my teaching is that you chose a probable reality of the fantastic, the magical, over the mundane status quo. You chose the best case scenario rather than the mundane, the status quo. You could conceivably, if you can remember the feeling tone that was generated during that creation process, embody that feeling tone in this current reality of yours, and then start manifesting these very positive worlds for yourself. Do you remember what it felt like to do that?
Well, I think it was just real inquisitiveness and just like nothing to lose. Maybe nothing to lose. It's just this kind of openness, and just also in a magical spot. It's a place that I use in the Redwoods, which is a magical place for me.
Yes, we have some suggestions in the books on how to practice creating the magical space. In that you wonder if a bird is going to light on a particular branch. You wonder if that is going to happen. When is that going to happen? You say to yourself, negative branch. I wonder if it's going to happen now or now or now. You're practicing creating a manifestation of that. Rather than telling yourself, bird, create a bird on that branch. That's
chemtrail disappear.
Yes. Yes. Keeping the ego intellect out of it and letting the soul come through to create your reality is another metaphor we use. One more question.
Okay. One more.
Do you believe in coincidence?
Does the Seth entity believe in coincidence? We have hundreds of pages on that concept. You have a soul family of which you're a part. You're a genetic family, you're an adoptive family. People you know, people you like, people you hate are part of the soul family. Now, is it fate that you meet your soulmate, let's say, someone that turns out to be your soulmate, and you live a happy, healthy life with them? It seems like fate. Is it a coincidence that you met them, rather than hooking up with someone that was not so well suited to you? It looks like coincidence from within your system, from my system, that is outside of your system, a light body existence we call it. It is not fate, it is free will choices. So there are no coincidences. In this way, I agree with the New Age practitioners who say there are no coincidences. It looks like it from within the space-time continuum, on a linear time conceptualization. Yes, it looks like a coincidence. In my view, a coincidence means that you're getting closer to the truth of your reality. We also suggest that if you look at any moment in time deeply enough, you'll see how everything is created. Everything is connected to everything else. Just a few more seconds. You're composed of what we call consciousness units in the books. They are incipient matter. They are matter before it matters, before it becomes matter. They are each, if you can think of them as elements, holographic and telepathic. So they are all contained in the one, and the one is contained in the all. Do you see how that works? Now let me say one more thing about that, and I think you'll get the message when I say this. We have you have an idea that I speak about in my book. We call it, when you walk across the room, you think of yourself as, yes, you're in a physical body, and so you get up from a chair, let's say, and you walk across the room, and you're pulling your physical body across the room, elegantly, or perhaps not so elegantly. you're pulling your body across the room. What in actuality is occurring is this. You are composed of consciousness units. The air is composed of consciousness units. You are recreating your essential identity from the consciousness units in front of you, so that when I move that, this, my soul, you might say, is creating from the consciousness units here my hand as I move forward. So you are an artist in this way, we say, because you are constantly, moment to moment, creating your physical body. It's your first and finest expression, even as you move across the room from this medium of consciousness units. Now, in the same way, these jars that are alive, consciousness units have life. They are sentient, hard to imagine, are also doing that same thing. They are creating themselves. Now, it's all held together in this telepathic network, we call it. Everybody, everything knows what everybody and every other thing is doing. And it's all held together in that framework, you see. Does that make sense? It is a bit of a mind blower, as you say. However, think about it, you know, particularly as you go to sleep. And I concluded. Excellent.
Time goes by pretty fast down here.
Yes. Then I shall bid you good evening.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Got his stuff. What a guy. Now, see, I know very little about what he said. It's like a... When he begins speaking, it's like a shroud comes over, and I don't know what's going on. Well, I hope you guys had a good experience.
Well, they were.
Thank you. I finally understand why my relationship to those tea canisters. I get it now. Thank you so much.
You're directly related to them.
Okay, let's see.